Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. I keep a running list of possible program topics. And one of the issues I've been thinking about lately is this person mentioned in the book of the Revelation called the false prophet. Just in case you're unaware, there are two evil individuals prophesied to come in the future: the Antichrist, a political figure, and this false prophet, a religious figure. False prophet is mentioned three times in the book of the Revelation, in Revelation 13, Revelation 16, Revelation 19. Given all of the previous prophecies about the Antichrist in the book of Daniel, in the letters of John, in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, one would not know that there is a false prophet to come except for these texts in the book of the Revelation. In Revelation 13, he is not called the false prophet, but he is called another beast coming up out of the earth. Revelation 13, 11. Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke as a dragon. He exercised all the authority of the first beast in his presence, and he makes the earth and those who dwell in the earth to worship the first beast, whose fatal wound was healed. Well, in that he has two horns like a lamb, apparently he will present himself as meek, but his ideology and his agenda will be devastating. And he directs people to worship the Antichrist, the first beast. Then in Revelation chapter 16, as the two individuals mentioned previously in chapter 13 are again described, this second beast is now called the false prophet. Revelation 16, 13. And I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits. So the beast and the false prophet are identified. And we see here an imposter trinity. The dragon, Satan, Lucifer, as he's called, the devil. And then you have the beast, this political world leader, and then the false prophet. Then in Revelation 19, all three individuals are again mentioned. The beast and the false prophet are thrown into the lake of fire, and the dragon, Satan, is bound for 1,000 years, Revelation 19, 20. And the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet who performed the signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who had worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire, which burns with brimstone. Then in Revelation 20, then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the keys of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. So regardless of your eschatological interpretation here, whether you're premillennial, amillennial, or postmillennial, the fact is the Bible is describing three individuals: the political Antichrist, the false prophet, and the devil himself. Are these three individuals movements or just ideas? I mean, some have interpreted the false prophet to be the sum total of all false world religions. Well, certainly there are religious movements that are opposed to Christ, but movements can be started by or led by and represented by actual individuals. The dragon of old, the devil, is not just evil personified. He is an actual demonic being. So I've been rethinking the identity of the false prophet, and I'm starting to warm up to this theory that the false prophet is Muhammad and Islam. So as I was jotting down some notes, getting ready to do another program about Islam, the role of Islam in our world today, there's a newsflash. Islamists are protesting outside the American embassy in Baghdad. They set the lobby on fire. The U.S. sends in helicopter gunships and 100 Marines. The number two military leader in Iran is killed in a drone strike. And Iran is seeking revenge. You know, sometimes I respond to current events, but most often, current events just confirm what God has already laid on my heart. Well, Islamic Jihad is back in the news, so we should pay some attention to it and see what God has to say about it. First, let's just review the timeline here. On December 27th, Shia militias in Iraq, backed and led by Iran, fired rockets into an American base in Kirkuk, Iraq, killing an American contractor and wounding several others. 2 days later, on December 29th, the president ordered airstrikes, hitting five positions of the Hezbollah brigade in Iraq and Syria. 25 were killed, 50 were wounded. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the U.S. strikes will weaken the group's ability to carry out future attacks on Americans and their Iraqi government allies. Then on January 1st, thousands of angry protesters show up outside the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, chanting death to America. President Trump responds by deploying the 82nd Airborne. U.S. gunships fly over the embassy. The Iraqi military forces fire tear gas and rubber bullets into the crowd. And by the end of the day, the protest is over. The president made sure this was not going to be another Benghazi situation like under Hillary Clinton when the U.S. did nothing to protect its U.S. embassy. Trump thanked the Iraqis for their help, and he tweeted, "They will pay a very big price. This is not a warning. It is a threat. Happy New Year." It's very Trumpian. Then a couple days later, on January 5th, a U.S. drone strike hits a convoy of Iranian personnel leaving the Baghdad airport, killing two of Iran's top defense ministers. One of them, Soleimani, was the head of Iran's elite military force. He was considered one of the top defense commanders in Iran. So what is he doing in Iraq? Well, Iran has been fighting American troops in the Middle East in a covert war. Soleimani was the mastermind. He was the head of the Iranian Quds Force, a unit of the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard that works outside of Iran to promote jihad and Iranian interests. Our Defense Department states that Soleimani was responsible for at least 70% of American casualties in the Middle East. Iran is supporting, supplying, training terrorists in the region. When Soleimani was killed, there were Iraqis actually celebrating in the streets. But these were Sunni Muslims. The Shiite Muslims and Iran were enraged. Under Saddam Hussein, the Sunni branch of the Muslim faith was ruling in Iraq. On the other hand, in Iran, the rule is by the Shiites. Once Iraq was democratized, the Shiites in Iraq, being in the majority, took power in the country. Iraq is 65% Shia and only 35% Sunni. It's kind of like the divide between the Catholics and the Protestants. And these Shiites in Iraq tend to side with Iran since Iran is Shia. Iran has actually created a paramilitary army of Shiites in Iraq, consisting of Iraqis who are Shia Muslims and who are pro-Iranian, pro-jihad. And again, Soleimani was behind the organizing of pro-Iranian militant groups outside of Iran. So when the U.S. killed Soleimani for his terrorist activities, the Sunni Muslims in Iraq were glad to get rid of this Shiite troublemaker. The Shia in Iraq were angered, and Iraq is ready to blow up over the Sunni-Shia conflict. As historians have always noted, if Muslims could ever unite, the world would be in trouble. But fortunately, in the providence of God, even Muslims can't get along with Muslims. So did you get all that? What's the story here? Well, part of the story is the rightness of U.S. action. That if the U.S. did nothing, which it has done for quite a long time, terrorists are then emboldened. President Trump tweeted, "Iran is talking very boldly about targeting certain U.S. assets as revenge for ridding the world of their terrorist leader, who had just killed an American and badly wounded many others, not to mention all of the people he had killed over his lifetime, including recently hundreds of Iranian protesters. He was already attacking our embassy and preparing for additional hits in other locations. Iran has been nothing but problems for many years. Let this serve as a warning that if Iran strikes any American or American asset, we have targeted 52 Iranian sites representing the 52 American hostages taken by Iran many years ago, some at a very high level and importance to Iran and Iranian culture. And those targets and Iran itself will be hit very fast and very hard. The U.S. wants no more threats." So, wow, we haven't heard a president talk that way in years. But that is what is really needed to control evil. Another part of the story here that we can talk about is the Democrats making partisan accusations against the president for his military action, calling it an illegal assassination, saying it's going to start a war. And a whole lot could be said about the left's worldview concerning evil and how their wrong worldview paralyzes them in being able to confront evil. The left is completely oblivious, or rather misunderstands human nature and how the world works, because they have a false reality of God and man and salvation. But a third aspect of what we could talk about here is how Iran can retaliate, or will retaliate. Immediately after the U.S. drone strikes, there were all sorts of World War III predictions coming from the media and even from some prophetic websites. But amazingly, Iran cowered. Iran fired some missiles into Iraq to save face, but sent them into vacant lots and even told the U.S. and the Iraqis that they were going to be shooting these missiles. Trump played their bluff and won. And even in the Iranian missile strikes, the Iranians shot down one of their own passenger planes. And now the Iranian people are protesting the Iranian government. Who could have predicted that would happen? You know, this is a real reminder that if you do the right thing, and if God's on your side, your enemies will have no success. God will put the spirit of fear in them, and they will fail in all that they undertake to do. That's Leviticus chapter 26, verse 7. "But you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. 5 of you will chase 100. And 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword." That's if the nation is blessed. But if the nation doesn't obey the Lord, then you get Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 30. "How could one chase 1,000 and two put 10,000 to flight unless their rock had sold them and the Lord had given them up?" If a nation's disobedient to God, the leaders, the military, will be like the Keystone Cops tripping all over themselves. But we ask, how can God be blessing our nation given our national corruption? Well, there are many Christians in the current administration. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, he's a Christian. He's a modern Daniel. And God seems to be blessing America for now to support and defend Israel. Now, we don't know how this is all going to turn out. The Islamic Iranian regime may actually collapse, or it may lash out in one last desperate effort to survive. But whatever happens, we should have no doubt that it will arrange the geopolitical situation in the Middle East to fulfill end time prophecy. And that's what I want to get back to, the bigger story here. The role of Islam in end time prophecy. We're introduced to this false prophet in Revelation chapter 13. And the standard evangelical interpretation over the last century was that the false prophet will be some sort of ecumenical religious figure. there are actually four interpretations. Number one, he will be some sort of Christian apostate, a pope or the leader of the World Council of Churches. Number two, he will be a Jewish rabbi. This false prophet will be an imposter, John the Baptist type figure, preparing the way for the Antichrist, who will claim to be the long lost Jewish Messiah. Number three, this false prophet will be some sort of secular humanist ideologue, someone who pushes the Marxist, globalist, critical theory intersectionality of the left. And number four, the false prophet will be Islam or even Muhammad himself. And this is a reasonable interpretation. Or here's a fifth interpretation. The false prophet is Donald Trump. This is from the periodical rag called The Week. And Trump is called the false prophet because he speaks arrogant, boastful words. But I think rational minds can remove Donald Trump from our list. So we have just four possibilities here. The argument against Islam and Mohammed being the false prophet, spoken of in the Revelation, is that the Revelation speaks of the false prophet as coming in the future, and we know that Mohammed showed up in AD 600. But if you read the text of the Revelation carefully, it doesn't say that the false prophet has to be alive during the apocalypse. It can be his influence that's in view, and a fourth of the population of the world is currently today following the prophet Muhammad. Islamic influence and Sharia law can cause mankind to worship the first beast, the Antichrist. And this is often the way the Bible speaks. Individuals and their influence can be timeless. In Revelation chapter 17, there is a woman riding upon a beast, the great harlot. She may represent an actual person in the future, but her existence, what she represents, spans the centuries. She is apostate Christianity, the false bride of Christ. And Muslims speak of Muhammad in the present tense. The basic tenet of Islam is there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet, not was his prophet. And the motto of the Muslim Brotherhood is Allah is our goal, the prophet is our leader. The Quran, our constitution, jihad, our way, death in the service of Allah is the loftiest of our wishes. So Muhammad is spoken of in the present, and people today follow Muhammad. In the history of the church age, the one false prophet who stands above all others is Muhammad. He's adored by many nations and people. He is the challenge to Christ. And how are Christians to understand the rise of Islam? This counterfeit religion with this counterfeit prophet. I mean, this is a huge scourge upon God's people, and yet it's never spoken of in prophecy. You know, one would think that God would forewarn us of this. Well, maybe he did in Revelation chapter 13. Muhammad sure fits the bill. In doing some casual study on this, when Muhammad arrived in the 7th century, Christianity considered Muhammad to be a false prophet. But by the late Middle Ages, Islam was just considered hedonism. And then after the fall of the Ottoman Empire, Islam was no longer considered a threat. It was just considered Middle Eastern theism. But let's remember, Muhammad is a false prophet, and Islam is all about following the prophet Muhammad. And this is the powder keg in the Middle East. Now, it could be that another Islamic prophet will arise as the Muslims are looking for the 12th Imam at the end of this age. So there may actually be a living false prophet during the apocalypse, but it's still all based upon this one false prophet, Muhammad. Another one of the objections to Islam being the false prophet is the fact that all of the world will go after the Antichrist, Revelation 13. Authority is given to him over every tribe and people and tongue. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, or rather revere him. And it seems right now inconceivable to most people that the Western world would submit to some sort of worldwide caliphate. But let's use our sanctified imagination. The Antichrist himself does not have to be Islamic. He could be a neutral, ecumenical, United Nations type of guy. The role of the false prophet would be to cause the Islamic world to follow the Antichrist. The Antichrist may be a person who actually bridges the gap between the West and the Middle East. In Revelation 13, it looks like this Antichrist will be highly influenced by the Islamic prophet. The text states that the false prophet causes those who do not worship the beast to be killed, and he institutes the mark of the beast in order for people to buy and sell, and there are many Islamic elements in all of this. Someone might ask, how could any of this take place given the geopolitical situation in the world today? Well, remember, the apocalypse begins in Revelation 6 with some sort of World War III. Peace is taken from the earth with a great weapon, and a fourth of the earth's population is killed. When that takes place, all bets are off concerning how we think the world will react and come together. The Islamic world may actually play a larger role right now. Remember, out of the 193 nations in the UN, 56 are Muslim. Also, another bizarre description of false prophet in Revelation chapter 13 is that he performs great signs, so that he even makes fire come down out of heaven to the earth in the presence of men. Now, the typical interpretation among prophetic teachers is that this false prophet will have the ability to do miracles by the power of Satan. And all the world will see and believe the power of the satanic realm, and there will be outright Satan worship in the last days. Well, maybe. But I question Satan's power to do miracles. For me, this has always looked like the Apostle John's description of modern technology. Paul calls the signs and wonders of the Antichrist lying signs and wonders. And with deepfake and fake news and the internet, false images can very easily proliferate. In a New York Times editorial, the future war is already here, drone strikes. This article is all about how the Iranians have drones, and back in 2019, the Iranians used a drone to destroy a Saudi oil refinery. Here's another editorial entitled, "This New Generation of Weapons Could Mean More Covert Airstrikes Around the World." There's the Hellfire missile that weighs about 500 pounds, but now there's the CBU-69, 7 inches wide, 4 feet long, weighs about 50 pounds, travels by gravity, reaches its target in silence in less than 1 minute. It can be GPS guided for stationary targets or laser guided for moving targets. The GPU-69 is inexpensive, and governments are stockpiling up on these types of missiles. And that is fire from heaven that can be called down in the presence of men. It does not have to be a miracle. There's much more that could be said about the role of Islam and biblical prophecy. If you want to get into the subject, Joel Richardson wrote a book entitled "Will Islam Be Our Future? A Study of Biblical and Islamic Eschatology." I mean, I don't agree with all of his conclusions, and I don't even expect you to agree with all of my conclusions, but Richardson does make a few good general points. But what difference does this all make? Who cares? I mean, just serve God and live righteous. In the history of the church, most of Christendom won't even see the false prophet. Well, if God puts this information in the Bible, it must be important. Revelation chapter 1, verse 3. "Blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of the prophecy and heed the things which are written, for the time is near." In closing, let me give you a few reasons for the prophecy. Of course, the prophecy is written to give guidance to God's people when the future arrives. As in Matthew chapter 24, the Christians are told to run for the hills when they see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet. And the generation that sees Israel, the fig tree putting forth its leaves, is to know that the end is near. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, the Christians were not to think that they were in the day of the Lord, but to know that the day of the Lord comes when they see the man of lawlessness is revealed. And that final generation must be able to identify this false prophet who will mislead many. Second, we are told about the Antichrist and the false prophet so that we're not bewildered or confused when evil arises. Because of the prophecies of the Revelation, we know that the rise of evil is part of God's plan. It's not our error. God's plan is first to expose evil and then to destroy it. So we're not to fear. While the world is fainting in fear from the expectations of the things that are coming upon the world, Luke 21, God's people are to fear none of the things we're about to suffer, Revelation 2. In fact, we're told to rejoice, Revelation 18:20. Rejoice over her, O heavens, and you saints and apostles and prophets, because God has pronounced judgment for you against her. And it is a great blessing to be able to read the end of the story before it begins, so that we can wait with patience for the relief that is to be brought to us at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, 2 Thessalonians 1:7. Third, prophecy is given to build our faith. In a sense, prophecy can be used as part of our witness. Just as the early Christians in the book of Acts used in their witness the prophecies surrounding Jesus' first coming, we can use future prophecies to show unbelievers that the Bible is reliable. They need to flee from the wrath to come. They need to know that there will be an apocalypse. I mean, for the last 50 or so years, 14,000 nuclear warheads have been aimed at each other. And this is not some small thing. Be a realist. You and I know what's going to happen. And finally, fourth, another benefit of prophecy is that it increases our confidence in the sovereign providence of God. We don't have to fear Iranian retaliation or any world event, because we know that God is in control and these things are happening for our good and his glory. It's God who holds the leash on the Antichrist and the false prophet. They're only given 42 months. Let me close with one interesting spiritual lesson coming from the Islamic situation in our world today. The modern jihadist movement was dreamed up by certain Islamic thinkers. Sahib Qutb in the 1960s became one of its founding architects, and he believed and promoted the idea that Islam had lost its way and only war could purify the Muslim community and win back greatness for Allah, Islam, and the glory of Allah. But if anyone wanted to destroy the attraction of Islam so that people would despise converting to Islam, and if anyone wanted to undermine the moral authority of Islam, you could not have come up with a better plan than Sahih Qutb. The very thing he thought would advance Islam ended up exposing Islam for what it is, making Islam odious to good and honest people. I really believe that the jihadist movement has been a force to keep Islam from being popular in the West. I mean, look how much the left panders to Islam today, because it's the enemy of Christianity. Imagine how much the left would support Islam if it weren't for jihad. Look at the testimony left by Islam. Soleimani dies, and 40 people are trampled to death in his funeral. Iran attacks, and 176 innocent people are killed in an airplane. The wake of death is everywhere in Islam. And that's why the Iranians are protesting the Islamic State. And from what I've read, more Muslims have been won to Christ in the last 30 years through the negative testimony of jihad than has ever been won to Christ in past centuries. Some missionary statistics put this number in the millions. NBC News article, life under ISIS leads these Muslims to Christianity. Quote, if heaven is made for ISIS and their belief, said one convert, I would choose hell for myself instead of being again with them in the same place, even if it's paradise. Reuters, Christianity grows in Syrian town, once besieged by Islamic State. And in a Newsweek article, why more Muslims are turning to Jesus. Quote, my wife and I have spent some 30 years as evangelical missionaries engaging the Muslim world. God has given us a love for Muslims, and we have found them to be overwhelmingly hospitable, reasonable, peaceable, loving people, yet staunchly opposed to the Christian gospel, and then things began to change. That historically unprecedented Muslim movements to Christ were taking place in our day was no longer in question. What remained was to understand why. And one of the factors this missionary references is the negative testimony coming from violent jihad. And this also applies to leftist secular ideology. When you have to live under it, you realize it's a lie. Now, not everyone realizes this, but for those God effectually calls to salvation, the exposure of evil leads them to Christ. And I hope as you see the evil of this world unfold, you will realize that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. Thank you for making God and country a part of your discipleship in the Word, rather than just following the news. Get some Bible commentary. And may God bless you as you continue in the Word, because just as we looked at Revelation chapter 1, verse 3, blessed is he who reads, and those who hear the words of the prophecy, and heed the things which are written in it, for the time is near.